These stories, I'll go back to part two of this broadcast. This is 6-4-3, April the 2nd, 1984. In November 1982, that was a year and a half ago, I was talking about the murder of Kevin Mulcahy. He is an important person because he was a link of Edwin Wilson to international terrorism, of the CIA, and to the Nugent Hand Bank. And I compared the importance of him to that bank collapse, to the murder of Roberta Calvi in June of 1982, to the Banco Ambrosio and the Vatican. Just as I say, in November of 1982, I said that William French Smith should be removed as Attorney General, that he was giving out leaks on arrests, drug arrests of major drug people, and not protecting Kevin Mulcahy, who was to testify against Edwin Wilson. And of course, what he had was so important to be told that there was no way that he could live. So that two important witnesses to these individual banks, on the one hand in the Pacific in Australia and the other over in Milan, have common denominators in Washington, D.C. and in Palo Alto. And I talked about the relationship of Helene Von Damm, who is a woman who hired for Reagan in California. She worked for his secretary and helped hire there. And many of these controversial people that are coming out now around Edwin Meese were the people that worked for her and Reagan in California, the very same people. And then she went to Washington to help make appointments before she was the ambassador to Vienna. And Helene Von Damm was directly linked to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and the CIA through Stanford Technology, which was a part of TCI out in Palo Alto, a small investment firm that grew to be a giant in terms of espionage. The TCI began small in Sunnyvale and in Sacramento, and Helene and Ronald were part of its beginning, and it was part of the actual Nazi Odessa that has spread around. And then I mentioned that was a year and a half ago that Edwin Wilson, the same Edwin Wilson that Jack Anderson is writing about today, working with Frank Turple, also was the partner of Robert Gray in the offices in Washington, D.C. And part of the expose that's coming out now about the Nugent Hand Bank is that money was diverted to France, to Michael Hand, who's supposed to still be alive, to South Africa, that the CIA was arming South Africa and sending ammunition and guns and diverting them down to South Africa because our government, until Ronald Reagan came in, said that we would not be arming that nation, which we, in fact, are doing. And Jack Anderson brought out the fact of the South African connections also. But I had mentioned on the air that Sven Hoffener, H-O-F-F-E-I-N-E-R, from Vienna, worked with Kevin Mulcahy, with Carlos the Jackal. Kevin took pictures of Carlos with them. They worked with the CIA, and he exposed the fact that, and it was in the New York Times, that they were surreptitiously arming South Africa with weapons and also in Angola to cause the government to be overthrown, and the link of these same people to arming the PLO and the guerrilla training in Lebanon. So the story of why the government, the United States government, won't do an expose on this, the answer has to be how the high-level people in our government, not yesterday, but today, the people in power today, link directly to what they're investigating now, so they won't even respond to the questions of why aren't you doing anything about it. Now, the interesting is going now to Ed Meese and some of the related problems with Ed Meese, and I wish I could do 3 or 4 hours. I spent the last 4 days just entangling, separating some of the pieces, and we'll put them on the air each week as we come to them. But switching now to Ed Meese, which isn't far from Nugent Hand and the Vatican stories that are coming out, was a profile in New York Times, March 29th, on the fellow, Mr. Myers, Roy Myers, who's doing the investigation for Senator Howard Metzenbaum. And if anybody stopped the appointment of Edwin Meese, if he can be stopped, one single man broke the ice, just like if it was James McCord at Watergate, and we won't know for sure who it was. But it only takes one person to change the course of history. The laws that Meese would put in would affect all of your lives and our future. And if he gets in, it's too bad. But one man tried, and maybe that giant effort will pay off. And the Senator Howard Metzenbaum sent Mr. Meyer to California to look into the background of Edwin Meese. And he went down to San Diego and he called lawyers and real estate agents and reporters and came back. One man sent one other man to do the legwork. And he came back with all this information to Mr. Meese. And the article in the New York Times says that Mr. Myers attributes Senator Metzenbaum's success in holding off Meese's confirmation largely to Senator Strom Thurmond, Republican of South Carolina, who heads the Judiciary Committee. Thurmond could have just banged the gavel after Meese testified, closed the hearing, and called for a vote. I can't praise him enough. And the reason I'm bringing this out is that we have stereotypes. People have. He's a liberal. I'll call a liberal. He's a conservative. I won't call a conservative. You don't know. And I bring this over and over again. When the My Lie story was to break, the story was taken to 28 liberal members of Congress, and it was Mendel Rivers, the conservative, that went along with it. Strom Thurmond is the one who bent over backwards to be fair to us. That's what these two men are saying. Now, they're not the same political ilk at all. Mr. Myers didn't come to California to look for anything that Thurmond would say go into. But the point is this, that I had called Orrin Hatch's office. I called Strom Thurmond's office. I didn't bother with the so-called liberals. I know what they do and don't do. And I called the conservatives on the committee because I think those were the only hope. And I bring this out because this is exactly in the New York Times, they're attributing it to Thurmond. And it was Thurmond who sent a letter that said, I want a special prosecutor. Now, it's interesting. They want a full investigation, which includes the Carter-Reagan debate, which has Mr. Meese's name on, and Robert Gray. And Robert Keith Gray worked with Edwin Wilson, also Mr. Casey of the CIA, but he was always behind the scenes with the CIA, but Keith Gray had the offices with Edwin Wilson. And they also had contact with Strom Thurmond. Frank Turbel and Wilson, that gang, had contacts with Thurmond. So if Thurmond, he'd be the last person to open up the case because you would think, because his name won't go that far into the hearings, but he knows that Meese has been linked to all these various people and into the Task Force 157 team. His name is on the documents with it. And in all honesty, for all the bad things he's done, and again, I bring this out, you can't have stereotypes. Those two men are giving credit for Strom Thurmond for keeping the case going. Now, The Nation magazine, March 3rd, 1984, has a report from Australia on Nugenhand to update it. This is the most recent report that came out of the investigations in Australia. They've issued several reports. The Australian government have printed them out. And this is the latest dispatch from the Australian Commonwealth New South Wales Joint Task Force. Oh, with this group, not Jack Anderson that talked about the weapons. This is the group that said Edwin Wilson, through Nugenhand, ordered 10 million rounds of ammunition. Do you know how many people 10 million rounds of ammunition would shoot? Are you ready for these people? I think Turpel and Wilson, or Turpel and Corkle, were arrested in New York with something like almost that close amount of ammunition for the New York police when they were first arrested. I'll have to look up the exact number. They sent 10 million rounds of ammunition, 3,000 weapons, machine guns, M1s, and carbines through the World Marine that went to Portugal and went down to South Africa. And again, the fellow from Vienna with his restaurants at the front was sending weapons to South Africa. Do you realize just what they're doing besides narcotics and missing money? The $500 million to $1 billion is nothing. The Nation is quoting an investigation, a report coming out of the Government of Australia, Volume 4, Nugenhand, Part 2. And this has to do with Task Force 157, Edwin Wilson, Office of Navy Intelligence, and their proprietary fronts. Now think of Henry the K in charge of all of that, Henry Kissinger, and the power he has working in the State Department with these people carrying on their dirty deals. Now Henry Kissinger just got another appointment. He keeps getting them. They keep rolling on and on. This is from Fortune magazine, and it was sent to me by a listener to World Watcher. He just was put on the board of American Express. This is for Jerry Ford's on there, too, and they're both on the board of 20th Century Fox. Kissinger gets nominated there. He gets $20,000 a year to be on the board and $700 a meeting and $500 for a committee meeting. On 20th Century Fox, he gets $50,000 a year, and he gets so much per meeting besides that. One is $700 a meeting, the other is $500. So that's $70,000 right there, just a year to be put on. And he's telling us to send all this money, millions and up to the billions, to keep people, native population, down in Central and South America as slaves. Now, Henry Kissinger was supposed to speak in Florida, and finally, somebody caught on. They had demonstrations, and he canceled his speech at the University of South Florida just 2 weeks ago, and they had signs about Chile and Cambodia and Central America. Kissinger, go home. I got an article from the Houston Post. 50 protesters arrested outside Houston. What about Vietnam, they asked. What about Cambodia and Chile and Puerto Rico? Kissinger kills, the sign says, and they were yelling, Kissinger kills. I wanted to go up to Palo Alto, to San Jose, to the demonstration there, but when I said I would go, I thought it was April 21st, and then it turned out to be in March, and I couldn't get up that week. But he spoke up there for the dentists, and the college wants to give him, the dental schools want to give credit for attending. He talked 45 seconds on dentistry, and he had an hour and 20-minute address, and the San Jose Mercury has a story. In order to get the dentist there, they were given course credits and tax deduction, to attend to hear Ken Kissinger. And they asked him, you know, a newsman, what have you got to say has to do with dentists? And he said, well, Kissinger replied that even the dentists have to know what's going on in the world, international problems. And so they brought Kissinger out here to speak at $65 a ticket. And I typed up a 2-page sheet to be handed out there on Kissinger and his Nazi connections. But I hope around this country that this momentum will build up and we'll find more about Henry Kissinger. Now, going from Henry Kissinger to Edwin Meese to another subject which is subtle but not separate at all. It has to do with the long overdue discussion, and I've hit at various times just a little bit on the cancer connections in politics. We could do week after week, and people ask me to do that on cancer and the politics of cancer. I bring it up now in conjunction with the Meese affair because of the investments of Mrs. Meese and Edwin Thomas and Henry Kissinger's relationship in the news and what is happening today. Now, there was a news story this last week, several days ago, $1 million gift to UCLA for Japan studies. A gentleman is coming to UCLA to donate, a great financier, Mr. Ryosha Sasakawa, R-Y-O-I-C-H-I, Sasakawa, S-A-S-A-K-A-W-A. He's 84 years old. He has a Japanese, it's called Japan Shipbuilding Promotion Association, a multi-billion dollar gambling syndicate under the guise of shipbuilding from Japan. And I'm going to do a lot more on Sasakawa, but not this evening. I just want to get to the Meese and the Henry Kissinger setup. Sasakawa, they describe him in the LA Times and San Francisco Chronicles, flamboyant, ultra-nationalist, gives out a philanthropic. They don't go into the fact of his war crimes and his role over in Japan and his fascism and his death squads, his assassination hits of prime ministers and all the bloody details that I'll go into. They have him as a great person who donated $48 million to the United Nations, and UCLA is going to get a glimpse of Sasakawa. He's going to be there. He has a translator from J. Walter Thompson that travels with Sasakawa. Now, I'll do more on Sasakawa, as I say, probably next week. But one of his interests in this country, he set up the U.S.-Japan Foundation in New York in 1980 with $48 million that goes to the ultra-conservatives. The president of the foundation is Richard Petree, P-E-T-R-E-E, who was in the CIA and the Tokyo embassy, so the CIA man is running the foundation. The members of the original American group include Henry Kissinger and Mr. Angier Biddle-Duke, former ambassador, Robert Anderson, former chairman of Rockwell International, and Robert Sarnoff of RCA, and I'll give you more on that next week. The grants made by Sasakawa Foundations in the United States have to do with nursing homes, elderly Japanese immigrants, conservative private colleges, public television, and cancer research. He's interested in cancer research. Mr. Donovan of the OSS was put on the cancer committee by Elmer Bobst, a layperson, as soon as the war was over, and our OSS chieftain who began and formed the CIA was interested in cancer. Daniel Ludwig is interested in cancer. Mr. Sisakawa is interested in cancer. These people put money into it, but cancer is increasing over and over again. This is the man behind Reverend Moon, behind fascist dictatorships, the head of the World Anti-Communist League, at the current time in Japan, and linked to mafia, gun running, assassinations, hit teams. He's interested in nursing homes and cancer. Now, Henry Kissinger has a close bond to this person and to Reverend Moon, as does Sven Kramer, who works with Reverend Moon, and the Korea Gate scandals bring out the name of Sven Kramer, the son of Fritz Kramer, in the National Security Council. Now, the Mises had investment in firms interested in cancer. Very small, I grant, but I don't know how far they go, and I'm suspicious that Ursula Mises is far more than what meets the eye, and if we continue pursuing this, we'll find out. Last week, I talked about biotech and the dummy fronts of the corporation biotech, or what are the overt fronts, and just last week in the Washington Post, March 22nd, there's a story about biotech. The lead article says, "Boasts of biotech had an in with the White House." This article is by Howard Kurtz and Walter Pincus, that Earl Bryan claimed to the fellow whose corporation he bought into that he had inroads in the White House, and he certainly does. This company that biotech bought into, biotech was formed by Earl Bryan as soon as the inauguration was over when Ronald Reagan was president, and Mrs. Meese couldn't wait 3 days to hand over her $15,000 loan to him. They bought a company called Associated Biomedic System in this company is up in Buffalo, New York, and Bryan bought one-third of the company. Former Secretary of Health and Welfare David Swope, S-W-O-A-P, was Undersecretary of Health and Human Resources, and he was supposed to be the contact in Washington that Bryan could get to. As late as 1982, biotech told the Security Exchange Commission that their Associated Biomedic failed to meet Food and Drug Administration requirements. They were building a contract to produce interferon. Now, interferon is that ingredient that they're trying to work with cancer experimentations that Dick Gregory claims that is taken from the black children in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know where he got his information, but he was always suspicious of where the interferon was coming from, and he felt he had information that there was a high level of it in blocks and that they could be used and then killed and take this from them for experimentation. Now, as late as 1981, this company that Bryan had over one-third interest in, he bought from Alex Burns over one-third of an interest in, they got a grant for $834,000 to get blood samples to the National Cancer Institute. Bryan lost interest in the company, according to the Washington Post story. He didn't live up to his promise of putting more money in, and then eventually biotech took control of the company and then abandoned it later into bankruptcy proceedings. It didn't go very far, but for some reason, in 1981, it was flying high, had a lot of money, and the fellow that had it said that the FDA standards weren't met, but that wasn't reason the collapse. He said this was not the reason for bankruptcy. So I wonder what happened in 1982 or the date that it went bankrupt, because there was money into it. Biotech poured money into the company after it went bankrupt, $675,000, and they claim that he was in constant touch with people at the White House. Ursula Meese was in such a hurry to borrow $15,000, she didn't report it. The person who gave it to her, Mr. Thomas, didn't report it. Everybody was silent about this $15,000, and it was plunked in the hands of Mr. Bryan, who goes on and buys into the companies. But I have the names of some of those companies, but this is the first one. The Washington Post has done a study on it. It was interferon, money, and blood samples to the National Cancer Institute. I don't know who they came from or what they sent. The second company that Mrs. Meese made a little money on, she tripled and then sold it. I mentioned it last week. Sold it for three times what she invested in it the day before the market dropped out of it, was at American Cytogenetics. And another story in the newspaper this week said that company is located in North Hollywood. It is a leader in preparation, screening, and examining slides for PAPS tests and evaluating tissue samples for the diagnosis of cancer. If it's the leading PAP smear case, I don't know why the market dropped in one day or what happened to that. But she was in such a hurry to invest some of their borrowed money into this one company, which has to do with PAP smears and cancer. And they also were anxious to put into the company with interferon and with the National Institute of Cancer, which did give them a huge hunk of money. Now, incidentally, I've mentioned Ms. Helene Von Damme many times. When she came to this country from Detroit, she went from Vienna to Detroit. She went to Chicago, Illinois, where she worked for the American Cancer Institute, American Medical Association. I'm sorry, she worked for the American Medical Association. So her links before she went to California with Ronald Reagan were in a medical branch, some part of medicine, involved with doctors and in some way where she never pursued any medical interests at all. She worked for the American Medical Association. And then Mr. von Bolschwing, of course, had Elmer Bobbs and Warner Lambert as his cover for his Odessa Nazi travels around the world. Now, one story in the Houston Post, Edwin Meese said the reason he didn't remember the $15,000 loan is that he was too busy when he moved to Washington, and he said, I was too poor. I couldn't afford an accountant. Now, this poverty story is really could be stretched a little far. I have one article of Helene Von Damme over in Palestine with Ursula Meese taking a trip. There's another article of Ursula Meese in Peru just in June 82, the time that her son was killed in Washington in a car crash. Of course, she didn't know that was going to happen, but she wasn't home taking care of things. Goodness knows what it cost to go to Peru. She didn't have an overt job at the time. She wasn't working. And just this last week, it came out that she got put on a payroll of a foundation, the Moss Foundation in Dallas, Texas, for $40,000. When their money problems became hard, she began to get a salary of $40,000 out of Dallas, Texas. And next week, I'll go into the Dallas connections to the Meeses and some interesting facts that by themselves don't mean anything, but adding them up, I get a different view of who is bailing the Edwin Meeses out around the world. But this poverty story is like Richard Nixon saying at the time of his being accused of taking money under the table by the Lincoln Club or Howard Hughes. He said, my wife has a cloth coat. I have a little dog named Checkers. I'm not going to give him back. We own a home that's worth, oh, I didn't look up the figures, like $80,000. We have a mortgage. That doesn't mean beans. They can live poor. Although I don't think Edwin Meese's $300,000 home or $200,000 looks like they're living poor. But he says, I was too poor to get an accountant to take care of my affairs. Well, I'm poor, and I went to HR Block this last week. They still charge me, and I go to them. If I'm busy, I still go to them. And Edwin Meese said, I was too poor. He is working with people from heavy foundations, from the Scaves, from the Nobel family. And I'll go into his foundation grants, his dummy fronts, his institutes, people funding Stanford, the Heritage Club, the University of San Diego, and a lot of dummy fronts. He says, I was too poor. I couldn't afford an accountant. I'm tired of the protection of the church for what they're doing, and I'm tired of this idea that he's just too poor. He can't tell you what happened. Now, if he was poor, Edwin Thomas wasn't poor. He's his long associate who worked with him in San Diego and worked with Reagan as governor. Edwin Thomas put up $50,000 to $100,000 into biotech. And I still want to know what his income tax was that he put that kind of money. See, I'm suspecting that these are dummy fronts for espionage of surreptitious activities and that they're not what they pretend to be at all. That's why they're not on the books. I've been looking up the background of Roar Industries and the people that were behind Edwin Meese, where he worked, or the Nobel group down in San Diego that are from Oklahoma, actually, and Texas, oil people, and looking up in Standard & Poor's and Who's Who and breaking the biographies, and they're not listed. Somebody, after last week's broadcast, sent me a list of all the biotech and similar kind of organizations on the stock market and had trouble finding and couldn't find what they were doing. Now, Edwin Thomas wasn't poor, and there was a story this last week in the San Francisco Examiner. Edwin Thomas, the source of the controversial money, hadn't reported the loan on his own financial disclosure form. The loan which Mies failed to report will be a focus of the special prosecutor. He makes, thanks to Edwin Mies or whatever the powers that be, $69,600 a year, and his wife got a job and his son got a job. But he is going to amend his disclosure form. You know, once they're caught, they amend it. I hope the government will be that good to me on my taxes if we find a error there that I can just amend it with no penalty, just change the record. Well, as I say, Mrs. Mies Ursula was in 1981, this was when they had their financial problems. In August of 1981, she was off with Helene Von Damme traveling on a trip to the Middle East, which is kind of interesting because in June of 81, or May 81, is when she took that loan for the children's future when it had no dividends and no security. Also, in the book, The Reagan's Ruling Class, that new book that came out, there's a story of each of their financial investments, and it tells in there that Edwin Mies didn't have his stocks in his name. He put all of his holdings in his wife's name, and they included Sterling Drug, which is IG Farben, and Exxon and General Electric and electric companies. So Mrs. Mies knows the difference between blue chip stocks that pay dividends for your kids and always hold up and are good, or putting it in a company that has no dividends, no record, that guarantees you, practically, they told him from the beginning, you'll lose your money, you're not going to make money. So she can write it off as a loss, but it went into the hands of Dr. Brian. That's the main thing. The $15,000 goes into his hands. And where does it go from there, and who does it go to? You see, it isn't that she lost money on it. They say, well, Edwin Mies is innocent or he would have more money. You don't know what he'll have 10 years from now. You don't know what he has anywhere or what's been promised. I assure you, if he keeps his mouth shut, he'll be a multimillionaire. And I assure you, if he starts talking, he'll be kicked around like some of the Watergators. Someone like G. Gordon Liddy makes $200,000 a year now. And that can happen also to people like Edwin Mies. The poverty now has nothing to do with the future. And it's disgusting to think that the comparisons are forgotten between the old Nixon sleaze and the Reagan sleaze. And finally, there was an article in the Washington Post, March the 5th, the Cancer Board appointments under attack. Ronald Reagan is being attacked because the National Cancer Advisory Board oversees $1 billion in cancer research, and that Ronald Reagan has taken from the 18-member board. He's appointing people that have nothing to do in terms of doctors and experience for the war on cancer. This board was created in 1971, the war on cancer, Congress created it, and he's made appointments that are being challenged. Representative John Dingell of Michigan wrote and said the absence of full range of scientific authority can result in failure to advance knowledge in key areas and therefore amount to the misuse of resources with potentially avoidable and devastating effects on the American public. He's been chastised on the front page of the Washington Post for making appointments that will not benefit us, that have to do with political cronies and not scientists or doctors who would serve the purpose. This is a $1 billion creation, the National Institute of Health, and he's being chastised for sabotaging the future of cancer research by his appointments. So I conclude by asking the question, is there, and this is evil to say, is there a political cancer? Yes, I think there is. Just like the Martha Mitchell cancer, the Jack Ruby cancer, there are a lot of political cancers, and I believe the technology is there, and it's being concealed and used. We'll do more on that next week, the Mises, the cancer conspiracy, and a lot of other stories. In the meantime, it's time to go. This is Mae Bressel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.